Hello, and welcome everybody to another episode of Pod Strickland. I'm your host, Schwinny Poon. This is episode 391. The Knicks are playoff bound. Well, they've been playoff bound, but they are now playoff bound as the 2 seed after a 50-win season, which feels nice. We're going to talk about that in kind of what ended up being an awesome last game of the season. I don't know. It was probably maybe the best one in a long time, but we're going to talk about that. We'll talk about plenty more, and we're going to do that with... First of all, Stacey, my co-host, at Stacey Payton 89 on Twitter. Stacey, how are you doing?
Enjoying the weather and the 50-win vibes.
Yes, no better way to enjoy weather than podcasting inside, as I like to say. And we are joined by the professor of the Strickland. His name is Matthew Miranda. Matthew, how are you doing on this, again, Monday morning?
Really, really, really good. Yesterday was many, many emotions, and I was enjoying all of them and still am.
Yes. We will talk about the emotions of it all. But again, before we get started, do just a few announcements. First being that Strickland has Instagram. Check that out. That is at the Strickland on Instagram. We are posting all kinds of new content on there. The Strickland also has a YouTube channel where you may be watching this podcast. If you are not done so already, please hit like, subscribe to the channel, leave us a comment. That'd be a huge help to us. Strickland also has a Patreon, which you can subscribe to. There are a number of different tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Pod Strickland podcast that I host every Friday with Prez. You also get access to Takes My Office Bozos, our newest podcast that is hosted by Andrew Steele, a.k.a. Doug, along with Zach Letter. And you get access to the Strickland Discord where the conversation never stops. There for the tiers, there's a $9 tier. That gets you access to Strickland Roll, my solo potter, I ran for Nerd, but then even more. You also get access to wonderful premium articles by Matthew Miranda, is here, and you get access to Strictly NFL, our newest podcast, which you guessed it is about the NFL. There are further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. Those come with a variety of additional benefits, like listening on pod recordings, merchandise discounts, and even potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yours truly one day, whether you choose to subscribe or not. None of this would be possible without you. And none of this would be possible without BetOnline, which is your number one source for all your summer sports season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest news and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet online where the game starts. All right. Well, the Knicks did win a basketball game yesterday to take them to 50 wins over the Bulls in overtime, 120 to 119. I think DiVincenzo played all but 21 seconds or something of this game. Pretty awesome win. And I want to say, like, while in the moment, it was very annoying that the Bulls were being extremely try hard for no reason. I actually think it's like, I think it was pretty awesome that they did, they were clearly competing to win that game. It ended up being a pretty nice spectacle for the NBA. While at the same time you had a team like Cleveland utterly disgrace itself, trying to avoid playoff matchups. And I just kind of, like, I tweeted this out yesterday, and I truly believe it. I don't understand the hand-wringing over chasing the 2 seed, because guaranteeing home court for 2 series, I mean, yeah, you can tell me, well, you know, the Bucks are food. They're going to be out anyway. Sure, maybe. We'll see. But, like, the playoffs often throw, what is it, a monkey wrench in the works. I don't know you can say that. I think there's a pretty decent chance guaranteeing home court for 2 rounds has an equal or greater or just about, again, on par probability for the Knicks to make it to the conference finals than the other way around. And also, like, at the time, again, I don't know how you even – maybe Cleveland is just made up of crybabies and soft players and guys who – are not inherently competitive or something, but I find it very weird to talk to a team that is supposed to be having, like, title aspirations and then being like, well, we need to lose this game so that we don't play team X, who is ranked below us, by the way. Like that to me is insulting. And I just tweeted this out, but like I all morning I've been hearing, oh man, the Lakers, they should tank this game so they don't have to play Denver in the first round. I'm like, I don't even know how you would go about having that conversation with LeBron James. Hey, actually, you should be terrified of Nikola Jokic. So lose this. We need to lose this game. And then we're going to have to play another play-in game, which it's a one-off. So if you lose that, then you're just shit out of luck. I don't know. I found all that conversation. And it's like also that game was fucking awesome. It was like a really intense game. There were swings, right? It looked for a while like, at the start of the fourth quarter that the Knicks were going to blow this game. But like they fought back. And, you know, they didn't play their cleanest game. I do think that there was some type of a little bit of mental fatigue in their last couple of games against Boston. Or sorry, not Boston, sorry. Brooklyn and Chicago, where, you know, you could tell they were not locked in defensively at various points and, you know, some sloppiness in transition and things like that. But it felt like a team that was, like, kind of over the regular season, but they can't actually – they're not wired like the Cleveland Sissies. It's just, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to really expect there. I just think like these guys are wired a certain way. Even if they weren't totally locked in, it was obvious they wanted to win that game. They wanted to get the 50 wins. They wanted to win the 2 seed. And I do think all of that stuff matters. Like, I don't think you can pick and choose when to turn up the competitive levels. Like I generally think teams like that either have a supreme talent advantage, like the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq, or they just get got. And the Knicks do not have a supreme talent advantage, but they give a shit, and that's their like defining characteristic, is that they just keep giving a shit when they really shouldn't. So I thought this was a very appropriate way for them to get to 50 wins, get the 2 seed. And now, once again, the Knicks don't have to look back at the Carmelo Anthony era for our last anything. 50 win season. Good job, Jalen Brunson. Good job, Josh Hart. Good job, everybody on this team. And Tibbs, buddy.
You're like Khrushchev with Stalin. Like, you just can't wait to wipe Carmelo from the history, like, completely.
Joseph who?
Never heard of him.
I was struck by what Cleveland basically admitted to the world yesterday. That's been... Cleveland, to me, is a exposed themselves as a couple of things. One is... they are absolutely on a different tier than the Knicks and the Bucks, because for Cleveland, their group has won like one playoff game. That's their peak. Of everything they've put together right now, they've won one playoff game. They haven't won a series. The Knicks have, the Bucks have. So for those teams, the standard of success this season is higher. Clearly Cleveland, and I would say this is owner descended. I'm sure Donovan Mitchell today is not thinking, yes, this is what I want to be a part of. I doubt that the other Cavalier players are thinking, yes, this is like how we wanted to. I mean, if they hold on, they're three. If you don't tank the fourth quarter, you're beating the Hornets. You're the 3 seed, I think. Because they have the tiebreaker over the Bucks.
Yep.
They would have had the Pacers. The entire reason why Cleveland tanked is they have to win in the first round and they don't want Philly. That's their whole perspective. That reveals something. That tells you, like, okay, that's one reason why you're not ready to, you're not on the level of these other teams, even the Knicks, even though I think you could maybe make an argument if you could dilute like athleticism in a laboratory and make it a liquid and measure volume, the Cavs might have more talent athletically overall than the Knicks do. I don't know, maybe. But they're nowhere near them because this is an organizational ethos. This predates this team. This goes back to when LeBron left the second time, or sorry, even the first time. He's this petty ass, cheap ass owner who clearly feels like
you can see what Comic Sans font writing guy, right? Remember that?
What's that?
He had the Comic Sans letter when LeBron.
Yeah. He's still got the comedy going on. Like, you have the option to show the world, what are you about? You have the option to show this player that you traded everything for, what are you about? And you've shown everyone what we're about is we want to get to the next round, because now my feeling is they're preparing for inevitability. Mitchell doesn't want to stay. They're not a contender. If they can win a round, they can slightly spin, hey, we made some progress. We were going in the right, we were making, you know, the right direction. Oh, he wants to go. Oh, that sucks because we really were. But they don't want to lose to the Sixers in the first round or the Heat in the first round and have Mitchell be able to say, look, this is 2 years in a row. You can't get out of the first round. You know, I don't want to be. I think Cleveland exposed themselves yesterday as what they are, and I think they're going to get what they deserve. The idea that that team should beat Orlando because I think they have offensive firepower in the backcourt that, like, the Magic just don't. But I'm not sure that they're going to beat Orlando because I think Orlando is closer attitudinally to the Knicks than the Cavs are easily.
Just to like kind of build on your point, but if you're a contender, if you truly believe yourself a contender, you're not like, oh my God, we have to play Philly or Miami, maybe. You view that as like, okay, that's our challenge and we respect them, but we're not scared of them. And like, again, I think it would have been an insult to like this group of Knicks players specifically, given what they've been willing to give you for the last, you know, whatever, 2+ months. What after Randall and OG went out, and obviously it's obviously great that OG's back, but he missed a long time too, and Mitchell Robinson. It'd be an insult to like look at them and be like, hey guys, like I know that you've given me all this stuff, but we really can't play Philly or Miami in the first round. Like that, it'd be a joke because if I'm Jalen Brunson, in my head, I'm not like, oh, we lost to Miami last year, so I just don't want to play them again. You're probably like, we lost to Miami last year and we shouldn't have lost. And we're better now. We will beat them this time. Like, it's just, I think fans have completely lost. Like, yeah, you can sit there. It's the fucking Junior Soprano thing. He couldn't fucking sell it. Like, you have to be able to sit in a room with, like, LeBron James or Jalen Brunson or one of these guys and explain to them with percentages and probabilities of matchups and everything that losing a game will benefit them. And I'm sorry, like, I just don't think that those guys are interested in hearing about that. Like, hey, we got to lose this game because we got to be scared of fucking Joel Embiid. Like, you know, it's absurd. And also, like, you can't simultaneously be like, Jalen Brunson's a superstar, and out of the other side of your mouth be like, well, they should be scared of, you know, Miami and Philly and whatever. No, if you got one of those guys, you probably shouldn't be scared of anybody because you've got to fight a puncher's chance against any of them.
Yeah. And also, I think from a fan perspective, you know, we're all born into different generations. I know for myself, I'm learning how much, like, if you never saw the 90s, like, this is all hitting you in a certain way because this is like, oh my God, this is what you've always been waiting for. So from a fan perspective, I can see as a Knicks fan, if last year did not happen, like if this were last year, if this were the first year that, you know, the Knicks, if you're a Knicks fan, like last year it was significant, I thought, for the Knicks that they won a playoff series. Like it was a big deal. They needed to do that organizationally. If that's where they were this season, not organizationally, but I could understand a fan being like, okay, I got to win around. If I'm a Timberwolves fan, if I'm a Sacramento fan, if I'm a Cleveland fan, I just need to win around. So as a fan, my perspective might be, all right, I'll take this or I'll take that. But the idea that, like, organizationally for this team, when I was seeing people, Knicks fans, sweating like, oh, I don't want Miami or Philly. Again, if you have any ambition, you're going to play these teams somewhere. There's no secret path to the finals that's just going to go like, actually, Brooklyn gets in there kind of. And there's no secret path. You're going to have to beat who you have to beat.
Last year, we didn't want to face Giannis, right? And then we dodged that bullet and still lost, right? That's the other thing. It's like if a team was good enough to beat Philly or Miami,
that's the thing. Also,
then it would have been really hard to beat. Period.
And we've seen very recently teams play like the Bucks did. I'm shocked. Not okay. That's the wrong word. I'm not shocked by anything the Doc Rivers Bucks do, but I'm confused why the same franchise that a couple years ago pulled this. You know what? We're going to lose our last game. We're going to give up our last game to avoid a certain matchup. And that dropped the Bucks a couple years ago to the 3 seed and let Boston be 2. And when they met in the second round, Game 7 was in Boston. If the Knicks play the Bucks in the second round and that's going 7 games, there is a world of difference between that game being at Madison Square Garden versus Milwaukee. I think if you your actions reflect what your ambitions are. And for some teams, they're on a lower level. And I think the Cavs have really shown the world we're on a lower level. And I don't think that's going to turn well for them. But I think for the Knicks, this is all you could want. Like, measure the progression. In 2021, the Knicks, the Heat, and the Hawks were all coming down to that 4-5-6. And I remember desperately not wanting Miami because I thought they were the worst. I did not want Miami 5. I wanted Atlanta. We saw how that worked. Last year, I did not want Miami. I thought they were the worst matchup for the Knicks.
Excuse me.
They were. You've changed. You've grown. I don't fear Miami this year. Bring them. I would rather play Miami than Philly specifically because I don't think they're easier. I want them because I think the Knicks will learn things in that series that matter more going forward against the Bucks and Celtics and other teams that Miami has handled. But because my team just has ambition, there's not a single series in the East that I'm like, I don't want that. I don't want that. That's why they're here. I do want this. This is what why are we watching? Why are we watching? Yeah. If we don't want to see, if Boston's in the second round, bring it. And I'm going to make this hopefully my only 90s reference of the whole episode. I know I can go there very easily. In 92, the Knicks collapsed at the end of the season. They blew the division. They'd been way up on Boston all year. They blew it. And the sky was falling because the Knicks fell out of what would have been the Cavalier bracket again. And instead, they got the Bad Boy Pistons in the first round. And by winning that, they got the Bulls in the second. And everyone thought, oh, fucked up. Well, they took the Pistons to the limit and won. They took the Bulls to 7 games. And that started a lot of what they learned and embarked on over the rest of that decade. You want to get somewhere? You got to test yourself. Cleveland doesn't test themselves. In 2 years, they're not going to exist. The Knicks are testing themselves. In 2 years, there's a better chance they're going to win a title than the Cavaliers are going to get past the second round. I'll take that.
Yeah, if you're going to lose,
Cavaliers' best player might end up playing for that Knicks team. So.
Exactly.
I mean, if you're going to, to your point, let's say the Knicks, let's say they lose in the first round, okay, to Philly or to Miami. Mm-hmm. Maybe our takeaway, maybe we learn more about them. Maybe the front office learns more about the coaching staff and the players from that than they would have if we tanked into an easier matchup, which, by the way, I don't really agree. I actually think the Pacers are a weird matchup for us. And with how easily they score,
yep.
I just think it's like you always play one. Like those teams will never win a championship, but we've often seen in NBA history them be nightmare first round opponents.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so, I just don't really agree with the idea that, oh my God, automatically the Pacers are a better matchup just because they don't have the playoff pedigree, I guess. But at least Miami with Miami, the playoff pedigree thing is real. With Philly, I'm like, they've gone as far as the Knicks did last year. So I'm not sure why we're supposed to be mortified of a team who, if anything, has proven over a long fucking time that they're nothing more than what the Knicks achieved last year. So I don't really give a fuck if Joel Embiid averages 95 points and 45 rebounds and 16 blocks per game in the regular season, because until he actually comes anywhere close to that in the playoffs, I don't give a shit and I don't view them as a contender. And I don't think he's an MVP caliber regular season player. That's the nicest thing I can say about Joel Embiid. Congratulations to him for being awesome at regular season basketball. But until I see him do it in a playoffs, I don't give a fuck. So I genuinely actually don't want Miami. I mean, I would prefer not to have Miami. I'd prefer to face Philly. But either way, I think, I will say this. I think Miami is, they seem to really understand how to defend, and they're the one team that I've seen consistently be able to use Josh Hart's unwillingness to shoot against him and us effectively to defensively game plan. They're the one team over the last few years that I think has really, really locked in a way that other teams haven't. And maybe that has something to do with, their other personnel or Bam, especially with, his physicality, let's call it.
Not Jack the Ripper physicality.
Yeah, just a real physical guy. Just the way Ty Domi used to be.
Ty Domi.
I don't know. I have faith in this team, and I think this is the best and most effective and most flexible I've ever seen Tibbs with a roster. If you're ever going to challenge yourself and push yourself and not be scared of the competition. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the year to do it. Like the Knicks have, and I wanted to say this because I feel like this hasn't really been talked about, almost because it's like we're all basking in like, wow, holy shit, Jalen Brunson is like a superstar level player. That's crazy. I can't believe that happened. Yeah, he is. So when you have guys at that level, like every season is an opportunity and every season has to be cherished. And every season is high stakes. Like the level that Jalen Brunson is playing at means that you need to expect and have higher expectations of this team. That doesn't mean like if, you know, they lose in the first round or something that everybody has to be fired and you need to get it. Like, I don't know about that. It all depends on circumstances and whatever. But there are no more like, this is just a fun year and a free hit for Knicks fans. Like, we need to, even without Randall, I think it's fair to have expectations of this team because that's how good they are. The sample size proves it. All the metrics prove it. What are they like? They're fucking 20-3 with OG and Brunson in the lineup together. Like they've played and proven enough that I don't think, and I'm not saying this as like a, like, oh, I'm trying to prep the table for to start like saying fire Tibbs if they lose in the first round. But like, I think like you need to really,
I mean, you understand, evaluate the whole roster, right? Well, it wouldn't just be Tibbs.
No, of course not. I'm just saying when you have a guy playing at Jalen Brunson's level, like you're not in the, this is fun also phase bad. Anymore. Yeah. This is an MVP caliber player. This is a guy who should be first team all NBA. And he's done it really burdening an offensive load. That is like, it's like on par with these other superstar guys that everybody loves. He's been spectacular.
And all of those other superstar guys are playing next to another all-star, right?
Yeah.
That I think is what people really are missing. It's like, of course he hasn't been as good as Giannis. It's like, well, he hasn't played with Dame. He's barely gotten to play with Julius Randle. The one thing I would push back a little bit on, I agree with you guys. I mean, I don't know if we can make grand sweeping, this is always the right way for teams to play, but I do think for this particular team, they're not punting a game. I think to the extent that there might have been health concerns, I'm sure the Knicks, they were, in fact, pretty cautious. Mitchell Robinson comes in if it's maybe a little bit more meaningful of a game, but they weren't going to tank. We knew that. The one thing I would push back on a little bit is I don't really buy the Embiid sucks in the playoffs narrative. There was that one series against the Raptors who ended up winning. He was a plus 87. They were plus 87 in his minutes. They lost. They had him next to a complete non-shooter. Now he's playing next to, I think, the best combination of fit and skill set in terms of Maxi. And I think Embiid is playing the best defense I've seen in his career, even though I think his defense is a little underrated. And personally, like, I think he's up there with Giannis and Brunson as the toughest matchup, individual player in the East, in terms of guys that are challenging to face. And then he can pull Mitch out of the paint a little bit. If, you know, I don't know how much jump shooting he'll do. I'm more scared of him in some ways than a guy who can't shoot the jumper, but, you know, gets 17 free throws in a finals game and he's a playoff riser. So, I would say with this with Miami, like, I didn't think they were better than the Knicks last year. I think they're a worse team than they were last year. And I think I have more confidence, period, against Miami than the Sixers, because I think the Sixers are really good, and I don't really buy that narrative that Embiid isn't good in the playoffs. But I think it's kind of, I mean, to your point, it's just fun to, it is like, we want to win. Don't get me wrong. I totally agree with that with Schwinn, but it is fun and enjoyable to be here, to be talking about a contender. Like, any of these series are going to be fun in the sense that it's going to be extremely stressful, but we haven't had this in a long time. And I think, you know, I don't think most Knicks fans, I didn't really see anyone like really whining about it. Most people on Twitter were like, let's go, whoever we face. But I think I'm much more excited. I think getting 50 wins psychologically is kind of a big deal too, at least for me. I don't know how much that affects the players, but 50 wins in the 2 seed, given everything they've gone to, I think those kind of those checkpoints and those little wins help. So, you know, I'm just thrilled to get going. It's going to be a long 6 days with no Knicks, but it should be fun.
It's good. But one, I mean, it's obviously great that they avoided the play-in entirely just for this reason that they have a week off. But like, yeah, I mean, I think there's no question it absolutely mattered to them. If it didn't, why would Dante DiVincenzo play 53 minutes and 39 seconds yesterday? Like, or whatever, 52 minutes and 39 seconds. You know, it clearly mattered to them. I don't even know. Like, it's just so obvious that it's not even to be debated. And also, again, like, to speak to just like what they've given us this year, like, you basically go into overtime, and it was obvious that Iheart had hit whatever minutes limit he had. So he was done for the night. And obviously the medical staff basically was like, I think they were like, all right, Mitch played a half. We know Mitch does and lands in crazy places. He's good. You don't have him for the second half, buddy. Figure it out. And like, again, you're just seeing a coach being able to like it's not even that there were weird lineups yesterday that I didn't love. But I did like that. I do like I can't have been critical of Tibbs in the past for like, well, you know, I just wish he was more flexible because we know this lineup and this rotation works, but we might need different stuff in the playoffs. Like, I can't be critical of that and then not give him credit for being more experimental over this last closing part of the season. Now, some of that might be enforced by the various minutes limits he's dealing with, but he is dealing with them. And, you know, he talked a bit about Precious in his post game yesterday. He was talking about how Precious gives you a different, like, he at least said it. He's like, he gives us a different look because we can switch everything when he's at the five. Sure. So I'm not saying he's 100%. I don't know. I still feel like in his heart of hearts, if Mitchell Robinson is available, if he can get 48 minutes out of Hartenstein and Mitchell Robinson, he will never deviate that from that. But for him to specifically say that yesterday and then use him in that capacity, which effectively turned off DeRozan's water in overtime, I think that's as much you're going to be able to get to be optimistic about this is the best version of Tibbs until actually seeing it in the playoffs. But like, I would be lying if I said I was not cautiously optimistic about Tibbs, which for me was like, I mean, in a lot of ways, that was probably my biggest concern for most of the season was just like, is he going to be able to use the kind of variety of pieces he has? And he has, and he obviously, you know, you get Jalen Brunson playing the way he has, and then I think so much of it trickles down from there, but so much of it trickles down from Tibbs too, like the buy-in, the commitment, all that stuff. You know, those guys are wired. Players have to be wired a certain way to be like that anyway, but he's clearly getting a ton out of this group, and like you can tell that there's a very good vibe, right, between like him and Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson. And I, you know, he kind of name checked them yesterday effectively as the two leaders of the team because he's talking about like competitors compete, you know, whether it's whatever, like he's like shooting contest cards. And then at the end, for some reason, he was like a podcast. so like, I think by saying the podcast part, he's like effectively revealing those two are the leader of the team, which I also think was clear anyway. But like, I don't know. Like, I just think that all that stuff is tied together. I think it's important. And anyways, the Knicks will play whoever wins this Philly-Miami game on Wednesday. So we'll see who it is we face. But I think it's fair to say none of us is particularly like, oh, my God, like, what a nightmare if we get Philly or what a nightmare if we get Miami. It just is what it is.
Who worries you? Who are the – I'm assuming for both of you that Boston is the team that you would regard as the hardest for the Knicks in the East. Who would be second?
Philly for me.
I'm just going to say – I think I'll say Miami, not because I think they're actually the second best team or the third best team or whatever. I do think they're better than, or I do think Philly's better than them. But there is something to like the catharsis of beating a team that beat you the year before. Mm-hmm. It feels like you're getting, it's like, okay, now we know. Like last year, we knew that we were better and we lost. But like now we know. Now we know we're better because we just did it. Like we just beat them. I think that gives you a confidence that you can't get from like I don't know. I don't think beating Philly would feel anywhere near as cathartic and like meaningful mentally than beating Miami, who like I know for us we're always like fuck Miami, the boogeyman, and but like their team is bullshit. Like they just win with like dark magic and all this stuff. But like they've won the East twice in the last 4 years. They went to the conference finals the other year. I guarantee you that inside the league, teams view them with a lot more respect even now than we ever will. And I think they're probably still viewed more than like, I guarantee if you ask like Tibbs, you give him truth serum, you're like, who do you respect more? Who do you think is like a tougher matchup in the playoffs? If you give him truth serum, he's going to say Miami. There's no question in my mind. Every time we play Miami, the way he talks about like their program and Spo and Riley and stuff is very revealing to me. Obviously, he coached under Riley, so he knows the type of personality he is. So, like, I think that there's kind of a mutual admiration there, and that part of it to me would make it more meaningful if they beat them. And it's also I know Philly's a historic rival because they're in our division, but Miami is its own thing. That's clearly like always going to be a more significant matchup for the Knicks. So just as like a fan of, you know, those 90s teams and all that shit, like, yeah, give me Miami. I want Miami. I would like to see them. And I think Spo challenges Tibbs in ways where, like, if he can match Spo to a certain degree, you're never going to outcoach Spo. You just have to do like up to 90% of what Spo is doing. If he can match that, the Knicks will win that series. And we will be like, okay, I that would give me supreme confidence in Tom Thibodeau moving forward if that happened.
Did Philly have Nurse last year?
No,
it was Doc Rivers last year.
That's another thing I'd point out where I think he's a significantly better coach than Rivers. So I think that is
enough. Is there a coach in the East that you trust less than Doc Rivers of the playoff teams?
JB Bickerstaff?
Yeah, fair.
Well, we've seen.
I think I already feel better about Mosley. I know that's not fair to say, but I already feel better.
I actually think it's kind of like it's also undermining to him. He's the person that has to deal with the consequences of like however that went down in the locker room. Max Strus did not seem happy after that game. He said something to the effect of like, we got to win. I don't remember what the hell it was
exactly. Yeah.
But like, I don't know. Bickerstaff might suck, but I also think everything about what they did yesterday, it's like that type of mentality. That's not the coach. That's like pervading from.
Oh, that's organizational.
Yeah,
that's organizational.
That's coming from the top. So
that's Gilbert.
Yeah, there's issues there that I think are like not.
He also wasn't good in the playoffs last year. Like
Bickerstaff.
Yeah, I always wonder about this though, because I'm like, I just think we were like a terrible matchup for them. I don't think there was much. We were an awful matchup.
I mean, he had no answer for the guard screens, right? I mean, I think.
But what was his, like? I just don't know what his answer is supposed to be. Like sometimes, and we say that, but like, the Knicks scored at a garbage rate in that series.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, I don't love JB Bickerstaff for that. I find him extremely annoying, and whiny every time we play them. But like, I don't actually know that he's a terrible coach or something. I just don't really believe in him. But Doc Rivers is look. If the one guy I'm saying I might not believe in more than Doc Rivers is Bickerstaff. I don't know. That doesn't say much about either of them. I would say.
No, I think their biggest problems are the owner and the fact that they drafted a guy that they thought would be like a transcendent player, and he's turned out to be like Tyson Good. Chandler.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, and they haven't played the four.
Yeah, that's a problem. Let me ask you this too, because I'm very curious about this. As the season's gone on, and I'm just positive, all things Knicks are good things, I try to guard against, like, okay, what am I missing that I might look back on in a few months and be like, how did you not consider that question? So there's a charge that's been made against Thibodeau teams in the past, and given how some teams clearly slacked off at the end, I wonder if you care or think about this at all. There is sometimes a charge that Thibodeau teams take the regular season. They're like a student who, like, they work so hard all throughout high school. Like, they just work. They get all the extra credit. They work harder than everybody else. They have the highest GPA. They go to college around people who maybe weren't trying as hard in high school, and you find out, like, oh, you really maxed out in high school. Like, by sophomore year of college, you've changed your major because you're actually not going to do bio. You're not getting past organic chem. There's a slant sometimes on the Knicks that, like, Thibodeau teams push so hard, 1 through 82, that they don't have another gear to go to when they get to game 83, and teams like Miami clearly prepare for that. Other teams do as well. Maybe do you have any concern or anxiety about that this year? I don't feel that way this year. I don't know if I'm just riding the vibes. I think I have reasons why I'm not worried about it, but I think in the past, maybe it's been a credible argument. Do you have any concern that the Knicks push so hard to get here that like they don't have really another move to show to people?
Miranda, was that hypothetical student? Is that hypothetical student in the room with us today?
I don't see them.
No, I think one thing though too that is relevant to this, like maybe in the past I could see that because the talent in the league up and down was not like, so when we think about the first like Tibbs team, right, is those Bulls teams. And I think it's a fair thing to say, like they did max out for 82 games and then they didn't have a higher gear and blah blah blah. Those things might be fair. One, when they had Derrick Rose healthy, they went to Eastern Conference Finals. Mm-hmm. Like that's what happened. When they didn't have him healthy, they lost in the first round. Or no, they lost in the first round the next year when he gets hurt to the Sixers. The year after that, they actually win a playoff series. Mm-hmm. And that was without Derrick Rose at all. They had Joakim Noah basically.
Well, they beat the Nets, right?
Yeah. Yep. They
a proud Nets team.
they basically beat them with, you know, Point Noah as like the facilitator. Oh, yeah. The year after that, I don't think they won a playoffs. No, they lost in the first round. Derrick Rose again gets hurt. He missed played 9 games after the year. The year after that, they lose in the second round to the Cavs, and then Tibbs is fired. Like, I don't know that there's much evidence there to assume anything. I'm not saying Tibbs is like, he definitely has legitimate question marks around his past record as a coach in the playoffs. There are certainly some shortcomings, which I think were more readily apparent earlier in his career. I do think he's more adaptable now, even though he's still somewhat rigid. And like, again, to go back to my point, there's more talent up and down the league. So like you have to keep your foot on the gas now in a way that you didn't have to worry about back then. Like look at yesterday. We could have ended, like, I've never seen anything like that before. Like that has never happened before in NBA history. I guarantee it, of like that many playoff berths being unsettled. Like that's just, and it speaks to the talent and the parity of the league that like, it did come down to that it came down to that last day that there was like the two playoff matchups that were locked in at that point. Yeah. So to me, like, I think things change, circumstances change, environments change. I don't think you can just walk into the playoffs anymore. And like, you know, you talk about parity, you know what the difference is? Back in the day, if you had a 2 seed, maybe you could kind of dial it down at the end of this regular season. And then you use the first round because you're like, yeah, we might lose one of the first 2 games, but we're so much better than this team. It's not going to matter. We can win 4-1, 4-2, and that'll help us actually get our legs back under us, dial everything back up, and you're good to go. Like, you don't have that luxury anymore. Like, we just saw it, right? We have a bunch of people, like, peeing their pants because we got the 2 seed and we're going to have to play Philly or Miami. But, like, so I'm sorry. I don't think playing the Pacers would have been easy. I don't think playing the Magic would have been easy. Like, I don't view any of these teams in the East anymore from 1 to 8. Like, I'm not saying the Knicks should be, again, they shouldn't be scared of anybody. I think they are the second best team in the East. But like, they also shouldn't, none of these teams are cakewalk. None of them are a joke. Except for Cleveland. Cleveland is actually the one team I'd be like, if we had any chance to play them in the playoffs, we would have smoked them. But like, obviously that didn't happen. But yeah, like I think as far as Tibbs is concerned and Tibbs teams, I don't really agree with that. And also that the week off helps. And we saw them have to win a lot of games towards the end of last season. And when the playoffs came around, they played well. I mean, they won a series. They smoked Cleveland. And I mean, I know that the Miami loss is disappointing and there's a lot of stuff with regard to Tibbs that was concerning in that series. But I didn't think they lost that series because they didn't have a higher gear because they were worn out. I think it was because Randall got hurt and played like shit. And
quickly got hurt too.
Yeah, quickly got hurt, but he was not playing well. But more or less, I just think it was like there were poor lineup choices made by Tibbs and guys could not hit open shots at all. And like some of that I do think is structural. But some of it is also just on players. So like this team to me has the construction to go and do things. Offensively, there's a lot more movement, player movement, ball movement happening, especially down the stretch with Hartenstein at center. which has always been a concern with Tibbs teams in the playoffs. Yes. So that is a significant difference to me. And also Brunson has just elevated to such a different level now cerebrally with how he handled, like, every coverage now he has answers for. Like that dime he had to Precious in overtime yesterday, that was unbelievable. Like he draws the help defender, and then as soon as he kind of turns his back to him to get back to Precious, the pass is already gone. Precious has an easy dunk. Like it is unbelievable the reads he's making against every type of coverage, and he's seen every type of coverage. He's seen a fucking box in one in the regular season. That's a real thing that happened. Mm-hmm. Like he's seen everything.
I wrote about this in the recap yesterday. I want to be like very. I think that I have never seen a Nick in my lifetime at the end of a game with the ball in his hands that I trusted more than Brunson, including Ewing. Ewing wasn't a point guard. Ewing was many, 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 many things. But I'm just saying, I in my life have never been at this point where I've seen this and I've been like this comfortable with what I'm seeing here. You see him also, and this is exciting as the year kind of got to the end and you begin to see certain teams running, you know, half court blitzes and boxing one and traps and everything. And one thing that's different about Brunson for me than Ewing, who was never a great passer. It wasn't his job, but like he wasn't.
He had averaged more turnovers than
assists. Yeah. And
the playoffs,
all these things. Yeah. Carmelo, who was not always a willing passer. But to have a guy now who can score like Melo, can pass like whatever point guard you want to pick, and has the intelligence, the patience, the ball handling, the everything to, in real time, adapt and adjust to a evolving defense and make – the thing that struck me so much about Brunson this season, if you watch him for 82 games, there's all great scoring. Like, what a great three-point shooter. When he came from Dallas, I didn't know how he would be as a three-point shooter. He shot a good accuracy. Could he do it from high volume? He's done it from high volume. Can he do it when Randall's not there? He can do it when Randall's not there. But the thing that's been the most strikingly impressive to me watching Brunson this season, and I can't remember which game it was, but it was the first game where someone really began coming at him hard with like half-court trap. Maybe it was Brooklyn. I don't know, half-court traps and doubles and things. His ability to like, not just like with Ewing, you were like, okay, just make the right pass. Like if the doubles come in, you're not going to make the Arvydas Sabonis pass, but just make the right pass. Brunson makes the Sabonis pass. Brunson makes the, okay, this isn't the right move. This isn't what the defense is giving me. This is what I'm taking. And it's setting us up for greater. So that's sometimes, and we'll look for this in the series, especially with Hart, that's sometimes the difference between, you know, a guy has to take one extra dribble and he's a little out of his range, or now he's got a straight, you know, cut and now it's all on the defense. I was going to ask you this question too. Is this the best playoff team that Tom Thibodeau has ever coached?
Yeah.
Wow. I think they have things that Chicago, I think Chicago lost that first year because LeBron was 6'8", and that's the one guy Derrick Rose couldn't deal with. But I think this is a better team. Like, I think, like you mentioned about Hartenstein in the passing and Noah, like you have a five who can give you multidimensional plus play on both sides. You've got the MVP caliber point guard. You've got shooting. Like, my God, the Knicks have shooting. You saw in the game yesterday, okay, our first center is out. Our second center is out in a league there where there's a dearth of bigs, supposedly. They didn't have to go to Taj Gibson. They didn't have to go to Jericho Sims. Thank God. They went to Precious Achiuwa. That's a different proposition that you're bringing to people. And I saw some Philly people tweeting about it yesterday. We think so much because we're thinking Knicks stuff. And Miami, I assume, you know, their people are subterranean. But the Philadelphia people
worshiping Riley in their layers.
But the Philly people straight up are saying, like, I don't want the Knicks. This isn't the team that I want to play. I'm not looking forward to like beating the, I think there's a sensibility to a lot of outsiders that like, oh, the Knicks still don't, you know, they don't count. They're not a real two seed. Like, what have they done? I think, you know, the Jackass is on TV saying the Pacers will beat them. According to TV, everyone in the East is going to beat the Knicks. Somehow they're the two seed. But to see now, like, all right, you're here and you're this good. And other teams, Philly was 30, I think like 32-8 with Embiid this year. Mm-hmm. And their people are saying, we don't want the Knicks.
But one of those eight, though, is worth mentioning, was a 30-point was it 30 or 36 point loss to the Knicks?
The OG, when OG's third game, I think, was that one.
Yeah. We still had Randall. So obviously, but I mean, if you compare it to last year also, right, they've upgraded it basic. You know, they lost Randall. So they don't have Randall, but Randall wasn't very effective in that Heat series. And I think Brunson is better, way better equipped, I think, by the way, to deal with the kind of coverages that Miami throws at him.
Right. Then Randall certainly would have been.
DiVincenzo is better than both Hart and Grimes, especially from a shooting perspective, right? At least from what they were giving you last year. They've replaced RJ effectively with OG Anunoby. Far superior, I would say, player, but certainly for this team with the spacing he gives you. And then, you know, you lose Randall, but Hart has been, you still have Hart, who's been really good. To your point, they have the better center depth.
They lost Quickly. Shooting better than Quickly did. We'll see how it goes in the playoffs.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's the one thing I am curious about. Will Deuce be able to? But they don't rely on Deuce as heavily as they did on Quickly as well.
True. Yeah, very true.
So I think that they're just a better team than they were. And I think the Heat got worse. And I did want to ask
if
you this.
If Hero is healthy, do you think the Heat are still worse than they were last year in a matchup?
Yes, I'm not worried about Tyler Hero. I honestly think if Hero played last year, I would have been a little bit, I don't think he makes the team worse, but as a Knick fan, that's a player we can attack with Brunson. That is a player in the regular season last year when the Knicks would screen with RJ, the Knicks killed them with that action with Hero on the floor. So I think I'm more worried about the Heat when they don't have any defensive liabilities on, which is why I'm not that worried about Duncan Robinson. I'm worried more about guys like Haywood Highsmith, who played fantastic last time the Knicks played them. But I did want to ask you this, because this is one of the conversations we had on Twitter. Historically, and the season isn't over, right? But you know, you talked about you haven't really seen anyone do something like this with Brunson. You know, I think I asked this, like, you know, how would you compare this to even the best teams in the 90s? Like, do you think this team could beat the 97 Knicks with Randall healthy and without, I guess? But
first answer is it depends on what rules you're going by. If you're playing 97 rules, I think those Knicks win. If you're playing these rules, I would think these Knicks win. If we can somehow mathematically adjust it to a total even playing field between the two sets of rules somehow, I think what it's funny to see like how much everybody gets overrated. Like if when you have grandkids, they will underrate Jalen Brunson. Like everybody gets underrated eventually, unless you're like Jordan or LeBron, everybody gets underrated. In some ways, I think Patrick Ewing has become a little underrated to some people who are forgetting that like this was a two-way monster. He's pretty good on both ends. He's really good on both ends. He's all NBA first team on both ends, like caliber player. Brunson may not win MVP this year, but like he's MVP level. Ewing wasn't going to be first team every year because there was Shaq and Robinson and Olajuwon, but he was that caliber every season. What I think is really similar between the two teams, I was thinking about this morning, with Randall out especially. Let me ask you this. Go back to 97, 94, whatever you want to go back to. After Ewing, who was the best player on the 97 Knicks? Overall,
Sprewell? No, he's winning on.
He wasn't on 97.
Yeah, he was 99. Trying to think, probably is it Houston?
Yeah, 97 Houston. Maybe that's his first year as a Knick. He's very good. He's not yet an All Star, but like, but the point that's what I want to get to. Maybe it's Houston. 94 Knicks. Who's the second best player?
Not Charles Smith. No, John Starks.
Probably Starks. Okay. These Knicks, after Brunson, with Randall out, who's the second best player?
OG.
Okay. Is OG, in your eyes, significantly more of an uplift than Houston in 97 or Starks in 94?
Yes.
Than Starks, yeah. Houston. I mean, then, I guess I to your point.
Houston. I would say more Houston than Starks for sure.
I'll put him above Houston, definitely. I'm not sure about Starks.
Was 94 his All-Star season?
Yeah.
He was really good that season. He's also huge for them in massive games. Like they were, I mean, they basically pissed away the game against Indiana, and then Derek Harper actually ends up saving the game at the very end. But Starks is awesome in that game. He's basically the only reason they even had a chance to win game six. Fuck you, Hakeem Olajuwon. Like I always think like the game seven thing is more about Riley and less about Starks.
It is. And also, I'll say this to my deathbed. Game 7 against Chicago at halftime, it was basically tied. Yeah. They don't win that series without what Starks does in the second half. Game 7 against Indiana, Starks is a big part of – Ewing's the biggest part, but, like, Starks was a major part. They don't get anywhere near the finals if Starks doesn't come through. So my question then for you, when there's a question of which team would win, this team or that team, I think they're very similar. I think they both have an MVP player who is levels above anyone else on the team. And I think right now they're both more solid than great everywhere else. Because I'm not like Starks was a one-time All-Star. Houston was a two-time All-Star. I don't see OG making two All-Star games. Maybe if they change his role and he scores 20 a game. But, like, I think they're very similar. I'm not copying out of your question. I think they're very similar, and I think it's a credit to this team to be able to say that. I think one thing I feel more comfortable about with this team, asterisk going into the playoffs, only having seen it in the regular season, in the 90s, if Ewing didn't have it, they were kind of fucked. Like, they were kind of fucked. I feel like this team has enough people who do enough things on both ends. Like back in the day, like Greg Anthony, one-dimensional player. Charles Oakley, he does a couple things really well, but like that's what he does. Charles Smith did some things, but like this team, if Devo's out there, he's not out there just for offense. If Hart's out there, he's not just out there because of what he does on defense. OG is brilliant on defense, but also can't leave him in the corner. Hartenstein does it on both ends. Mitch is a threat on the offensive glass. I think this team, and I think part of that is it's more necessary for the game today. You could specialize more in the 90s. You can't be a good team now and have a bunch of one-sided players. But I think it's a credit to where this team is that you can even ask credibly a question like, is this team better than a team that won 57 games and got David Stern out of a conference finals? That's great that we can say that. Is this as good as a team that literally was 3 points down going into the fourth quarter of game 7 of the finals? It's great that we can say that.
Yeah. I would say I can't put OG above Starks until I see him in the playoffs. But Starks was really, really good that season. And again, he was huge for them in basically like a bunch of critical playoff matchup games in that run.
If you go to the finals, game 1, Starks shot like 2 of 18. And game 7, he shot like 2 of 18. The rest of the finals, he was great. Yeah, it was just those two bookends killed him.
Honestly, like, I love Patrick Ewing, but he was terrible in that series. Like, he's the biggest reason they lost that series because he played like absolute shit. Harper probably wins.
Yeah. I'm glad you
went there. And Harper probably wins finals MVP if they win that series.
Absolutely, 100%. I'm glad you mentioned that point with Ewing because it ties into something I want to ask about also with Thibodeau, then tying back to Riley. The Knicks in the 90s, like part of their problem, other than 94, actually, ironically, was that the Knicks never won easy. They would always play like, they really didn't sweep, under Riley specifically, they didn't like sweep anybody almost. It was always physical, even when they would win a series like in 5, they would win like 85-80, like whatever. And I think in 94, you saw like, they played one game less than the maximum that you could play that year. After 82 games of a regular season playing Riley ball, after all the practices of Riley ball, I don't feel like when you like it seems like the talk around the team now is that you got a bunch of guys who are like clearly working hard, but when they talk to players about, you know, Thibodeau has just, there was a piece in The Athletic recently where someone, maybe it was Katz, someone reflected on in I think a year ago, players voted Thibodeau like the person they'd least want to, the coach they would least want to play for. And they spoke to DiVincenzo and maybe someone else, and you could get a sense from the players. The players were like, not, you know, players don't hide, you know, if they're like, ah, yeah, a guy is a hard ass. 4 years here, players who are here, players who have left. I can't remember a single guy who's been like, Thibodeau killed my career. Thibodeau practices too hard.
The only one is like Reddish, but he's a joke and a fucking clown.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not counting that.
Yeah, OB has
like somewhat said like, I mean, OB is unhappy with his role. It is what it is.
Right.
But to your point, I think the guys actually say a lot of great things about him, right? I think Dante came out and specifically went against that narrative. Mm-hmm. So
I think another reason that I'm more encouraged now than then is like Herring wrote about this in his book. Riley's admitted it. Like, you want part of the reason Charles Smith was, I think, dead at the end of that 93 season was because Riley kept playing him on a fucked up knee, kept practicing him hardcore on a fucked up knee. And Smith's career ended prematurely. Smith's career ended, I think, by the time he was 29 or 30. I love the fact that Thibodeau, for all of the aura and rep of like this hard driving taskmaster, he plays all his guys crazy minutes. I don't get a sense that like this team is suffering for what they've been through this season. And I get a sense, to your point earlier, Schwinn, about parity. When you see a conference where 2 to 8, it's 50 to 46 wins. There's not much distinguishing the teams, but one thing that does is that team with 50 really is a dog. And if everyone is basically has parity in terms of talent, but you have one team that works harder, seemingly wants it harder, pushes harder, that's an enormous edge.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, I've never been like, I've talked about this when, you know, the Knicks have sucked, where it's like, I don't really love the idea of multi-year tanks and intentionally throwing away seasons, because I don't think you're finding out what you actually need to find out, you know, from, you're not finding out what really drives a team to winning if you're not trying to win. And I understand, like, there's a difference between, like, I'll put it like, if the front office at a certain point in the season is like, hey, like, we're kind of, you know, we're not going to make the playoffs, we have a chance to lock in a higher seed. If they want to do some strategic resting of like players here and there, I'm not like an extremist where, like, I do think there are points in a season where it's okay if a team dials it back, right? But what I think can never happen is you cannot tell your coach going into a game, you have to lose this game. I think that's a really big mistake. Like, that's what's wrong about what Cleveland did. It's not that they lost, and it's not that they lost by without playing their best guys. It's that they put out a lineup that was completely non-functional for the express purpose of losing. There was no other point to the lineup they put out there other than, oh my God, we don't want to win this game. And I think when you, and that, again, like you mentioned it before, but like, that to me is that no coach in their right fucking mind is going to be like, let me just throw this game real quick. That's just not how those guys are wired. There's never been a head coach that's going to do that. That's an organizational decision. And I just think that sends a really weak message, and I think it's undermining to your coach. So the best thing I can say about the Knicks under Leon Rose and with Tibbs as head coach is that I think Tibbs has 100% been empowered to make the decisions on his own. But I also think he is now more receptive to and open to getting perspective from the analytics and, you know, tied with his own reading of the game to come to better conclusions with, you know, lineups and rotations and all that type of stuff. Is he perfect? No, because no coach is ever going to be perfect. Nobody's perfect. It's not possible. But if you're not happy with how he's generally utilized his roster this year, I don't know to tell you. Like, you know, he hasn't been perfect. I think we've all seen enough Precious at the four next to Mitchell Robinson. And with Deuce at point, like, we've all seen enough of that lineup. But if that's our biggest fuck up, if that's the biggest thing he's messing up, I just think, like, you have to give the guy some leeway when he's basically dealing with a team that has one player capable of creating offense with any level of consistency and efficiency. Mm-hmm. Miranda, I know you've got a little bit of time left here before you have to head out at least, but I did want to talk about this yesterday, because that game yesterday, again, I thought it was awesome. And I genuinely like again, in the moment, very maddening, but I think it's cool that Chicago tried the way they did. And actually, I think to me, that's like, I'd be surprised if they lose the play-in game to Atlanta. Like, I think Chicago has been playing like they care and are trying to play meaningful ball games for the last however long.
Ever since LaVine went down.
Yeah, and Atlanta has been just like a fucking clown show all season. I think one team is a lot more prepared for high stakes single elimination. Maybe I'll be wrong. Who knows? That said, one guy in their team who was fucking awesome was Alex Caruso yesterday. And it's crazy to say that in a game where Brunson put up 40 on him, that Caruso was awesome, but he really was. And I couldn't be like, well, I was watching the highlights last night for like the 7,000th time. And it really struck me. I was like, Brunson versus Caruso is like such a good matchup because they're both super physical on either end of the floor. Like Caruso's physical defensively in a way that is very, very interesting when he's paired against Brunson, who is also extremely physical offensively. And I thought their matchup was awesome. I think their matchup in general has been awesome, even though Brunson's kind of got the better of him the last couple of years. But like, I think Alex Caruso is the guy I want the Knicks to add most this offseason. That is kind of what I came away from that these Chicago games thinking, because I love Deuce. I think we're all very, very happy with what Deuce has shown us. If you think this team has a window that's open in the next couple of years, Caruso 100% gives you what you're trying to get from Deuce, which is an actual guy who can run the offense when Brunson sits, but is also capable of playing off of Brunson. And he gives you another versatile guy who is like, he's not Josh Hart, but he is Josh Hart. Like, they're basically the same person, even though one can shoot and one can't. They just are, they're like very, I don't know how to explain it. They play with a force and a physicality that I think is very unique. And I think, look, if you look at all the numbers, like I looked this up yesterday, three of the top six guys by defensive EPM would be on the Knicks in that scenario if they retain Hartenstein and OG, which I expect them to. Caruso is fifth, OG is sixth, Hartenstein I think is second. Like, and I don't think he's not a scrub offensively. Obviously, he's not like, you know, some huge gravity monster or whatever, but like he makes shots, he keeps the ball moving. Again, and I just can't, like, his compete level, like the dog level is high. Like Caruso's dog level is insanely high. I think he, and one other thing too that we, like, I have thought about a lot as the season's gone on, especially after the trades too, is like there is an identity with this team and there is guys that fit into that and guys who have the right attitude and mindset and toughness, quite frankly. Like, I don't think there is a guy more made in a fucking lab to play for these Knicks than Alex Caruso in the league that is not currently on the Knicks. He's a difference maker. He's a quality player. He has championship experience. I think if you have to give up Deuce, you have to give up a couple picks or something like that, that's the framework of a deal, I would do that. I think Caruso is a serious difference maker, and I think he'd be an awesome fit on this team.
Yeah. It was weird to come out of yesterday and, like, respect the Chicago Bulls, like, a lot more than Cleveland, given what the Bulls have been for a while. But the curiosity there, so Caruso next year, last year of his deal, he makes, like, I think around $9 million. It's a great, maybe the best, one of the best value contracts, certainly in the league. Chicago has been weird to now, I feel like, in terms of what are you doing?
Yeah.
Are you building? So on a practical level, like, how do you get Caruso? That could be difficult. Certainly in terms of fit, like, yeah, I mean, he can shoot. He doesn't turn the ball over. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's funny that you mentioned trading Deuce, because all the hype on Deuce into the draft was like, this is a Tibbs guy. Like, this is the Tibbs guy. And Caruso's that way too. The hope, you know, maybe McBride could evolve to a point like that.
Yeah.
You know, he's got, although he's shorter, he's got huge hands, enormous arms.
Caruso's just a special defender too. Like, he, Caruso's crazy. Yeah. He's a fucking 6'4 guard who completely changes the game defensively when he's on the floor. Like, he is a spectacular defensive player.
Yes, he is.
And it's like that. It's not that I don't think Deuce is good. I think Deuce is really, I think he's good. I think he's proven that he's a quality player. But like, it's more about this team and where they are and what Caruso gives you. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I really think, like, you know, you asked what, obviously Caruso is not some high level shot creator, but don't you feel pretty confident that, like, if he was our backup point guard right now instead of Deuce, the team is not insignificantly better because he would just get the offense to run better when he's on the floor without Brunson?
Yeah, I mean, I think the major I think the major distinction is Caruso has, I think he was on the Lakers when they won. Like, Caruso has been a proven part of a championship rotation. Deuce has not had the opportunity, but also has not shown that yet. And like Stace said earlier, like, one of the biggest questions I have going in is, all right, you know, lights are brighter. Like, how does Deuce do it? Not worried about Deuce, but until he does it, you don't know that he can do it. Yeah. Caruso, like you're saying, if you were going to design in a lab, like, what's a piece you might, he really would do it. And going forward, especially if they, I could see this happening, if you're talking long future, and maybe you decide OG at the four makes more sense, and you're going to move on from Randall and make moves in other places, like bringing a scoring guard, whatever else you want to do with the roster. Caruso makes a lot more sense, I think, there too, and three guard lineups, or as you're saying, like a backup, who can do what he does off the bench. He would be a dream. Like, he would be absolutely perfect, and is the classic, like, I think half the league just pines to see him on a different team, just to see him somewhere where it matters.
I think a lot of people had that tweet yesterday, right? That it's a shame this guy doesn't really play meaningful basketball. I'm not sure I'm ready to give up on Deuce at this point. I think I'm probably a little lower on Caruso's creation ability than Schwinn is. I think that you're still going to look at some stagnant lineups, but I think you brought up a great point, Matt, and we've talked a lot about the possibility of the Knicks going after a guy like Donovan Mitchell. If they do get another creator and they're going to stagger anyway, then the other part of it is Caruso's 30, McBride is on a really good contract too, and he's going to continue to improve, and he's only 23. So punting on that guy after he shot close to 40% from three seems very comfortable in the mid-range. You know, it's a pretty good two-way player, but Caruso's also 6'5", right? So in those three-guard lineups, probably gives you a little bit more. He's I mean, Deuce, I think, is a very good defender, but Caruso, you know, I think, could he be as good as Caruso one day? Sure, but you're already getting that, right? Those are the conversations the Knicks going to continue to have. They already made a trade like that, right? I think, to, you know, Shun was saying, like, earlier, this is no longer, this is just for fun. That quickly an RJ trade symbolized that, right? That they were like, look, quickly might be an all-star one day. RJ might be an all-star one day, but this guy is going to make us really good right now, a contender, which I think they are now, and they absolutely were with Randall. So, you know, that's the kind of move it is. I would feel a little like, I wonder with Caruso in terms of injuries and stuff, is that so much of an upgrade that it's worth hunting on Deuce when maybe you could move a guy like Precious or, you know, handle it just with picks or you know, Bogdanovich or whatever. But that, then you'd have other moving parts of the salaries. You know, if for like a year, I think it would make the Knicks better. I just don't, like, you'd have to be sold that Caruso really solves your backup creation problem, which I'm less sold on that than maybe you guys are, as worth it to get rid of Deuce, at least.
If they were to keep Randall, I'm less concerned about that as an issue with Caruso, because they just wouldn't need as much maybe creation from the backcourt. But it does give you, as a potential Knicks fan, a reason to root for Atlanta, because if the Bulls, maybe if the Bulls lose a play-in game for the second year in a row, it will start to dawn on them that it's not working and they need to move people, and Caruso would be, half the league would be after him, but obviously, like, maybe that would finally start to pry him loose. I'm going to run in a minute, but I want to ask you guys this last question that's been fun in my mind, because for once it's someone else who is at shame. More embarrassing tank job, the Mavs at the end of last season or the Cavs in the fourth quarter yesterday?
I think it's pretty easy the Cavs yesterday.
Yeah.
The Mavs last year were not good. And they made a decision that tanking to keep that pick was worth more than their. Yeah, they decided tanking to keep that pick was more worth it to them to become a quality team than making an 8 seed last year and getting gentlemen swept. I understand Luka, and yeah, he always gives you a chance and whatever, but like, I think that team was dead on arrival last year. This year, you know, they've benefited from that move, right? They got Lively, who's been good for them. Condolences to him. Apparently his mother passed away last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, you know, we'll see. But he was a good rookie for them. I think he looks very promising.
Especially with Gafford now ahead of him, I think.
Yeah. And they got Rishon Holmes back in that deal effectively. Yes. And his contract was then eventually moved for Gafford, who's been really good for them. So, like, I would say that decision has and I think Dallas, honestly, I would not want to play them. I think they look really dangerous to me. So that trade's, it's benefited them, and I think they've justified why they did it. The Cavs better fucking win this first round series, because if they did this and they lose this first round series, everybody that front office should be gone. The coaching staff should be gone. And I promise you, Donovan Mitchell, I think Donovan Mitchell will probably ask out anyways, because if I'm him, I'm like, wait, did we just tank to keep the pick? Like, or did we just tank so that we can get to the second round? But now we're playing Boston? Like, what the hell? So I just think it's a joke, and I think they're kind of fucked either way.
I think of Cleveland this year is like if Dallas had gone a little farther next year. Like, I don't think Cleveland has any more on the ball right now than Dallas did late last season. I thought Orlando was the perfect matchup because, like, they're totally green and they can't score. Like, they're a perfect first round matchup for almost any good team. Like, I think the Celtics, the Bucks, the Knicks, the Heat, the Sixers, maybe the Pacers, I think would all beat Orlando, because you have to in the NBA today, I think you have to be able to score some points, and like, they just can't. But put them against this Cav team, the way this Cav team looks and has looked for a while, this might be it's funny to me that Cleveland chose this slot, because I think they're the only team in the East that I think Orlando could beat. I think Cleveland should win, but would you be surprised a week from now if the Magic are playing the Celtics in the second round? 2 weeks from now?
No, I think Orlando is going to win. I really do. Yeah. I feel like the vibes in Cleveland are not good. I don't like everything I've seen from them of late. I just don't like a lot of the things that I've seen from them at all this season.
Yeah.
And
they struggle to score, but the Knicks struggled to score against Cleveland last year. The Knicks had the size to really overwhelm them on the glass. Yeah. That's what Orlando does. Knicks had, they had a feisty perimeter defender in Hart. RJ played well on defense that series. The Magic have a great matchup for Mitchell and Suggs. That is one team. That's the one thing a lot of Knicks fans were like, I'd rather play Orlando than Indiana, all of that. I was like, he's going to have to deal with Suggs. Isaac has been playing really well. They're ramping him up. I don't know if, maybe he's being held back because he took the vaccine and that's causing some issues for him. Isaac has been playing really well. Franz is a great help defender. They do have a guy who can hit tough shots in Paolo. I don't like that matchup for Cleveland for a lot of the same reasons they don't match up well with the Knicks. The Magic are built kind of in that mold with even more length, but that physical defense, and then grind out some isolation buckets from Paolo. They're a little bit like the Knicks of 2 years ago, but I think they're more talented. 3 years ago, the Hawks Knicks. But I think the Knicks did not have a defender like Suggs. The Knicks did not have a help defender like Franz. So
I really hope Joe at some point, like, Joe Ingles is just hitting this backbreaking, devastating, like, game 5-3 to just, I want Joe Ingles to be the reason that Donovan Mitchell is out of Cleveland. I want that symmetry.
Be good to see. All right, Matt, do you need to get out of here? Or are you still good to go?
Five more. I can do five more.
All right, great. So I don't know. I guess we'll kind of like watch this season unfold as it has. Are you particularly worried about any? And like, we talked about Tibbs, but like, is there anything on the roster that you're particularly worried about right now? Because aside from the lack of shot creation, I'm like, it's probably as best as you could have hoped. Like, especially with Randle going out, I think they're in as good a place as they could be. OG being back has helped, obviously. DiVincenzo has been really great. Josh Hart has seemed to find some rhythm. Still wish he could shoot, man, with some consistency, but you got to respect the rest of it. But like, yeah, I mean, all things considered, considering the trades and everything that happened, it's kind of amazing the Knicks have gotten here. But they seem to be in a good spot. They seem to be, I don't want to say they're peaking necessarily at the right time, but I think they have kind of, they've shown a resilience that seems like it'll be good for them in the playoffs.
I feel better about this team going into the playoffs right now than I have since probably, honestly, like 94, 95. Because 97 was a new team. I didn't know what they were going to do. 99 was a new team. I didn't know what they were going to do. 13 was like really a one shot. Like, let's see how far this can go. I feel really, really good. The thing that I'm most anxious about is something that I can't see or define, which is the playoffs are such a completely different everything. Like in 2021, the Knicks went in the playoffs and Randle had led them in points and rebounds and assists. And over a whole regular season, he was brilliant in all those categories. I could not imagine coming into that series, even though it seems obvious in retrospect, that, okay, Atlanta is going to throw everything at Randle, not let him get off the kind of shots or passing lanes that he's used. They're going to force him to do what he's not comfortable doing, and it's going to work, and it's going to hurt the team. I did not imagine last year that – I really think last year they got hurt a lot by injuries. I think of Randle, and even though quickly struggled, but you saw against Miami, like they couldn't stop Brunson, but I don't think RJ was ready. What am I worried about going into the season? Something that I'm not thinking of that the rest of the league is going to notice. And I don't know what it is. Like, it seems the Knicks have a formula. They're going to try to disrupt it. My assumption from the regular season is go ahead, triple Brunson. Devo's going to hit threes. Other guys are going to make plays, but that's different when you're doing that over 2 weeks against all kinds of competition versus 2 weeks of Miami saying, we're not letting you do A, go do the rest. Or Philly saying, okay, yeah, you've had one of the best center combinations in the league against 29 other teams, but now you're getting 2 weeks of Embiid. Let's see how that does. It's a terrible answer. I don't have a specific defined fear about this team. That's my fear. Like, what am I missing that the rest of the league is probably seeing? Because I don't see it. I feel like offensively, they have the main piece that they need and they have the secondary piece. I feel like defensively, they have the defensive power that they need at the rim. They have it in this omni-destructive defender in Anunoby. Now you're at a point where Hart and DiVincenzo and McBride are like your tertiary best defenders, which is pretty sick. I have a coach that I feel confident in. They have the home court. There's no one in the conference that I fear. I have less specific fear right now than I've had in any year in like 30 years, which is a good feeling. What about you guys? What are you most, is there anything that stands out to you as like, if this season is done in about 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever, what do you think you're most likely to look back and be like, yeah, I did kind of know deep down, like that could be a problem.
I mean, I worry most about Boston and the fact that they're, first of all, just a really, really good team. Like, yeah, regular season-wise, they've been historically good in a lot of the advanced stats. They have one thing that the Knicks, even yesterday, struggled with, which is five out, which is not, I'm not even saying that's like a Knicks-specific thing, but
yeah.
Every team struggles with it. The Knicks probably still handle it better than a lot of other teams, but one of the big advantages the Knicks have is that you have Hartenstein and Mitch out there in the paint, right? So yes, are they even particularly bad at going out to defend the big? No, but it takes away one of your biggest advantages. And Boston has the ability to do that, not just with Porzingis, but with Horford. So I would imagine that's the biggest fear. And then if they do face a team like Miami that can really throw a lot of bodies and length at Brunson and get the ball out of his hands and guys don't knock down shots, you know, whether it's Hart and McBride or the guys. McBride, again, like I said, I actually think he's a really good shooter, but it's the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Those would be the two reasons. One, either, you know, five out against Boston, the Knicks play well, but it's just they're too tough to defend and they hit too many threes, or, you know, a team like Miami or Philly, you know, is able to, you know, even, I hate to say this, but Oubre gave, you know, they threw Oubre at Brunson, and then it's not just the length, but it's all the doubles that come off it. If the Knicks aren't shooting well, Brunson, I think, has been making the right reads, but they got to hit shots, and that is a little bit of a – they're not a great shooting team, right? So,
what are you showing?
I think it's really just like I would say my main concern is weirdly probably like Mitchell Robinson. He's looked better against the Nets. Offensively, I think he's actually looked fine and relatively active. His hands have been a mess, but that might be him just getting back up to speed. But his offensive rebounding and all those type of things has been good. It's the defensive end where he's really struggled. He still seems like he's a half step slow. I've seen too many guys that I would expect not to finish around or over Mitch finish around or over Mitch. It seems like he's a little bit late, laboring a little bit. That foul against Cam Thomas at the end of the fourth quarter on a three, that looked very much like a, I think he stays on his feet if he's at his best, at his top level. But I think he's kind of like, he's a little wild right now. It reminds me a little bit of like a regression towards what he was when he first came in. Obviously, he's still way more disciplined than that, but like where he kind of feels a step slow and he makes some rash decisions as a result. But like, we need him. I don't think they can, you know, if we play Philly the first round, let's say Hartenstein can give you 30 to 33 minutes. You still have another 15 to 18 that you have to account for. So that's obviously not a great matchup for Precious at the five, especially obviously not when Embiid is on the floor. So Mitch is kind of key to that. And
Embiid draws a lot of fouls. So there's the scenario in which Hartenstein gets in foul trouble as well.
I just think that's it. Like, I just think if he's in a good spot defensively and he can work and ramp up his kind of conditioning, that would be huge for us. Cause I think there really is no other team that would get that level of defensive play from their center spot for 48 minutes a night in the playoffs. So if that's if I have a concern, that's probably my main one. And like, I mean, I guess I could say the non-Brunson minutes, but there is no actual solution to that on the roster. Like, they just have to hope that Bogey can kind of like get hot, help them tread some water. He had another, I thought he had a pretty solid game.
He did.
Yeah. And so like, that just is what it is, but they actually do have a chance, if Mitch is right, to have this like elite center play. And they did have elite center play when those two guys were healthy earlier this season. So being able to have that back, that would help a lot.
I'm going to jet, but I'm going to leave you guys reminding you of how blessed you should feel that the biggest problem you listed about the Knicks was not that Doc Rivers was their coach or that Daniel Gilbert is their owner. So we've come a long way, baby. Enjoy it. Look forward to this series. Hope to talk to you guys about it again soon, but yeah, I feel good, and I think everyone has reason to feel good, and we'll see how things go, man.
Cool. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, man.
Peace, you guys.
Later. So obviously the Knicks, they played hard in their game yesterday. We already talked about the Cavs. But what did you make of kind of the Bucks? Because, I mean, they got blown out yesterday by the Magic. If they win that game, they get the 2 seed. I actually don't think they were tanking at all. Like, I just think they played like shit. And I mean, Damian Lillard has been terrible. His entire efficiency right now is being buoyed by how much of a foul grifter he's become. Is there like, I mean, I think the Pacers are going to beat them. And I actually don't think it's going to be very competitive. I could see that being like a 5-game series, honestly.
What is the prognosis on Giannis?
They don't know if he's going to be ready for game one.
I mean, if Giannis plays, then I think if Giannis plays more than – if Giannis misses more than 2 games, I would pick Indiana. If Giannis only misses 2 games, I still think he should dominate. I don't trust Indiana that much. I don't trust Halliburton in a playoff series. But I do think Milwaukee – without Giannis cannot exploit, you know, some of the things in his game that you'd like to see in the playoffs. So from that standpoint, again, without Giannis, yeah, I think you'd be right. But if he plays and if he doesn't, if he only misses two games, I don't think this Indiana team is beat like that Heat team last year. I think Lillard's going to have a big series. They will be able to pull Miles Turner out of the paint with Lopez. So if Giannis plays, I still would pick the Bucks.
I think Indiana's a terrible matchup for them with or without Giannis. They're not athletic. Indiana's very athletic. Indiana is a team that constantly is moving in the half court or in transition. The Bucks have not been able to keep anybody in front of them all season. And I think Brooke has seen some slippage defensively for sure. Damian Lillard has again just been an absolute mess. And quite honestly, like, he's already had a kind of very up and down playoff resume. It's not out of like the pale that he could have a bad series. I mean, and honestly, the way he's playing of late, like, you'd almost bet that he is going to have a bad series because he just cannot string together any type of consistency. I think he's shooting career lows from 2 and 3 or something like that. I don't know. I saw a stat yesterday anyway. But he's been really bad. And, you know, Portis is fine, but Portis is going to, you know, he's going to give up everything he gives you on the offensive end. He's going to give that up defensively. I don't know. I just think the Pacers are, I mean, they've had their number all season. I know that that was before Doc became the coach. I'm not sure that says anything, like, because they've been significantly worse since Doc became that coach. I know they're improved in their defensive transition numbers, but, like, I mean, if that's what you're hanging your hat on, given the way these teams are trending, I don't know. I just think this is a bad matchup, and, you know, Turner and Pascal, while not ideal in many ways and definitely have their shortcomings, it's not a terrible kind of, like, if you're going up against Giannis, it's not a terrible two guys to have there in the front court.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, but I am, I think what Milwaukee and what Giannis can do in terms of disrupting, when, you know, if it's Halliburton coming to the paint or Giannis being able to wreak havoc with some other ball movement, you know, that's kind of it. I think it's a good point to mention that Milwaukee lacks athleticism. We don't know what's going to happen with Middleton, but, you know, Middleton's another guy. When he's healthy, it's the team does play better. And, you know, I mean, they haven't played as well of late, but I think people are overstating a little bit, kind of. If they don't have Giannis, they're fucked. But, you know, it's less, I think that if he plays, I still think they're the better team. And I think that I have to see it with Halliburton in the playoffs where I really trust him winning a series against Giannis.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I like the Bucks perimeter defenders, it would be way more, you know, where you are. But like Middleton was a great defender. He's not a good defender anymore. Malik Beasley was a terrible defender. Damian Lillard, terrible defender. Bobby Portis, bad defender.
But I, like, mean, you could say that there are also some pretty poor defenders on the Pacers.
For sure.
They're very athletic, but I don't buy the defense being that great yet. Halliburton's a poor defender.
Matherin's out for the season anyway.
No, that's right. Yeah, so if guys like Nembhard, you know, they're a worse defensive team, right?
They're probably the worst defensive team in the league. I don't know what the numbers are, but... they're terrible defensively, and
it can't be worse than Charlotte or Washington, right?
They're probably not as bad, but let me see. Per possessions, they have the 24th defense in the league.
They have to be the worst out of all the playoff teams, right?
That is correct, unless the Atlanta Hawks get it. Yeah. Yeah, I just, that part is definitely worrisome to me, but they rank 24th. The Milwaukee Bucks rank 19th in defensive rating. So, or 18th. Yeah, 19th. No, sorry, 19th in defensive rating. This is per Basketball Reference. So, like, yeah, the Pacers are terrible, and they're definitely meaningfully worse than what the Bucks have been, but the Bucks have not been good defensively. And Indiana has been one of the great offensive teams in the league. They finished second in the league in offensive rating. And there's pretty much an equal gap between their offensive rating and Milwaukee's versus Milwaukee's defensive rating and Indiana's. So I think if Giannis misses time to start the series, one or two games or whatever it is, I don't see any hope for them. I think Indiana will smoke them. I really do. Like, I think this is just a disaster season for the Bucks in a lot of ways. The Giannis injury couldn't have happened at a worse time, and I think it'd be a huge mistake for them to rush him back. So, it is what it is. Not our problem, but I do think it's interesting, especially since Damian Lillard did start the All-Star game over Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. I mean, is it crazy to say Brunson's had a better season? I mean, because we were talking about this, and, you know, Kenny Smith said, oh, Brunson's been the best player in the Eastern Conference. Is it crazy to say he's been better than Giannis? Because, like, I was like, Giannis is putting up a historic season. He did, 30, 10, and 5 on 60-plus shooting, never been done and all that. Counting stats, he beats Brunson. But Brunson beats him in 08 EPM, for example. Offensive blocks plus minus, Giannis is a small edge. And he has an edge in overall EPM. But, like, I just think you can't ignore the context, right? I mean, he played next to Dame. Brunson got even better after losing the one other guy who could draw attention. I don't think it's crazy to say he's been better than Giannis this season, right?
No, I think he, at the end of the day, like, one team overachieved expectations despite facing a lot of adversity, change in season, etc. Brunson was central to that. He was the driver of that. There's no question who the best player on this team was. And every offensive metric, every metric, he's in that conversation. He is in the mix. Versus Milwaukee, whose fucking coach got fired halfway through the season, who has severely underachieved expectations since that point in time. And quite honestly, who have shown to be pretty soft throughout this season. And the Knicks finished with a higher seed. Like, I'm sorry, I don't really... We're not talking about just ranking the best players in the NBA in a vacuum. That is not what the All-NBA team is. That is not what it is. It is who had the best five seasons. That's it. That is the only fucking criteria. That is the only criteria now for All-NBA. If you're...
Yeah, so the argument would be statistically Giannis has had a better season.
That's fine. But if you want to just say All-NBA is, you know... If your MVP ballot is any different than your All-NBA ballot, then you're doing it wrong. Because your first team All-NBA should be your top five MVP guys. That's it. That's the only criteria. It is positionless. So the only criteria is who had the best five regular seasons. And I don't care if it's Giannis. I don't care if it's Tatum. One of those guys cannot be getting in over Jalen Brunson. And if it does happen, when it happens, whatever, I'll probably lose my mind over it. Because logically, it makes no sense.
There's another guy who has a case over Tatum, by the way. There is a player who, if they put him over Brunson, I don't think it'd be right. But there is a guy who as well deserves it over Tatum. And he's not a guy who's usually ignored in these conversations.
Anthony Edwards or LeBron James?
LeBron. Like, he's been hooping. They're in the play-in. He's been better than Tatum. They are in the play-in, and he plays with Anthony Davis. But I think he's been better than Tatum this year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think Tatum has no first-team All-NBA case to me. I mean, it's fucking bananas that we're even talking about it. Like, his case is that he plays on a 64-win team. That's not a case. That's like, it's just stupid the way he's talked about. I don't know. I think it's insane that anybody would vote for him in first team All-NBA. And I thought this for a while. There's like, you can look at all the people that are over this stuff, okay? They love to talk about, do you remember when Jokic was first like, kind of like, you know, pushing his way into the MVP conversations? All these people EPM, fucking all these stats, right? To highlight, like, hey, man, this guy is, like, dominant across the board statistically. When it's like that, right, when you're getting such a strong signal across multiple different indicators, that's a pretty good sign that, hey, this guy, he must be really good. I'm going to list this off because I tweeted this effectively. I gave Zach the kernel. I incepted Zach. No, I just sent him these stats to tweet out from the Strickland account. Because I was looking it up yesterday because I saw people debating this. Here are the stats in which Jalen Brunson outperforms Jason Tatum, okay, for this season. And in a lot of these advanced ones, Tatum's not in the top 10 guys. So I'm just going to read these off. He finished ahead of him in OEPM, offensive EPM, overall EPM, estimated wins, PER, offensive block, box plus minus, VORP, win shares per 48, points per game, assists per game, field goal percentage, 3-point percentage. Like, he also had a point. I think his true shooting percentage was a point below Tatum's on significantly higher usage. I just genuinely don't think there's an argument here. He is one of the five best players in the league this season. That does not mean that you need to agree that in a vacuum of just selecting players based on longer than their performance of just this season, that you need to view him as top five. But there's no argument that he did not have a top five regular season this year for an individual player. There's none. And him losing out to a guy like Tatum would be an absolute joke.
Yeah. It's tough to disagree at this point. And even in a raw ranking,
he's at worst a top 10 guy.
There's not a whole lot of guys that can, like, I really think the guys who are like poo-pooing Brunson's case are like, they're not watching the coverages he's seeing. You know, that's kind of the point you've been making, is nobody else is dealing with that nightly. And he makes his teammates better. He's elevated the team. He's not as good of a defender as a lot of the other guys on the list, but he does what he can. He plays hard. And, I played basketball with a couple of old friends this weekend, and I must have said Jalen Brunson's name like 50 times. Every time someone took a floater or, you know, had like a crazy post move, because it's just, this is a lot of fun having to be able to root for a guy like that.
Yeah, totally agree with you. All right. I think that's a decent place to end it. Stacey, let the people know where they can find you and plug anything you'd like to plug.
You can find me at StaceyPatton89. Nothing to plug. All the great work at the Strickland. Check out all the content as we roll in the playoffs. This is the most exciting time of the year, and I'm ready to go.
Awesome. I have nothing to plug. Just plug the work at the Strickland. Shout out to Sam and Tyrese for all the stuff they did this year on the Run.Down. We'll be continuing that through the playoffs as well. I'll just read this off because I think this is a good tweet. This is from account NYC's Leo. Sorry, I think that's how you guys should go with it. Jalen Brunson is the only opening day starter for the Knicks who finished as a starter. We changed this team and our rotation. He should be MVP and Tibbs should be Coach of the Year. Tibbs actually deserves serious Coach of the Year buzz. He's not going to get it. They're going to give it to Daigneault. But he's been fantastic, and Jalen Brunson's been fantastic. I can't say anything more than that. The fact that how much rotation there's been around him and he's been keeping it afloat should really count for a lot more than I think people are accounting for in the conversation. So, all right, that is the show for today. I hope everybody has a great rest of the week. We will be back, I'm sure, with some pods at some point. I will be back Friday. And until then, thank you to our sponsor, BetOnline, and I will see you soon.